Hi, you're listening to the TL Podcast. My name is Thomas Le Huyen, and I am interviewing someone who seems ordinary, but who is achieving extraordinary things. That is the quest of this interview. Welcome, Cameron Wilson.
Thanks, mate.
How you doing?
Very good. Good to see you.
Excellent. Now, the award on the night, Sales Manager and Ambassador. We probably have the time to talk about both of them.
Okay.
But let's go through this like everybody else. You were there on the night.
Yes.
You know that you've been nominated for a few things. And how did you feel? You don't know yet what's going to come out. You don't know the outcomes. How did you feel?
In regards to the awards on the night, sales manager, I didn't feel much of anything. I didn't count myself in the running at all, which I think I told you before. Ambassador, that's something that means a lot to me, and obviously I won last year, so I was hoping or thinking that I might be in with a chance. But as far as all the lead-up awards and the sales manager, I was literally getting there ready to clap the person who won, so yep. I got the shock of my life when then.
No, we're not talking about that yet. So did you feel? Because you had to a little bit of a 10-minute show at the beginning that you have decided to put on. So how do you do all of that, knowing well I'm going to be in the running? Does that distract you at all?
Oh, potentially. Listen, I get really excited for awards night, and the first job was to get through that 10 minutes without hopefully causing too much trouble, but to get the room buzzing. I just know how special that night is when we all get together. So I was excited for a couple of weeks beforehand, and it wasn't necessarily to do with the award nominations. It didn't have any time to think about it, to be honest, by the time I got off stage and we were already sort of halfway through the awards.
Yep.
So, and then it was time to catch up with the people on the table. So there wasn't nerves as such. I was just excited about the night, really.
Yeah. So let's talk about the award first. You won the Sales Manager of the Year. Tell me, take me through the feeling.
Well, as I said, the first feeling was speechless because I'm not big on surprises, and usually I've got an inkling about stuff, and I had none whatsoever. So I'm sure if you watch the video back, I didn't move for about 10 seconds while I figured out what had just happened. Then it was about, okay, I haven't prepared a speech, so how long can I stall and then work out what I was going to say? And I spoke to the team, which I think they appreciated. Afterwards, I've gone through a couple of different reflections. The first one was, it's something I've got to work on in myself, but the first one was, did I really deserve it? And what my idea of the Sales Manager of the Year was, and is one of the reasons why I probably didn't put myself in the running. So then I had to go, okay, I've missed something. What have I missed?
Yeah.
And then the more I've thought about it and the more I've reflected on it, I was having a good laugh to myself on the way down, because I think from where I started from a management point of view, it's absolutely insane to get that trophy. I mean, if you chat GPT'd or Googled the necessary requirements of a manager, I don't think many of my natural talents would have come first to the list. And the biggest things I struggle with in all of life tend to be things that make you a good manager. So
All right, so let's go through them. So what do you think is a natural talent that a sales manager should have?
Naturally structured, enjoy structure, naturally disciplined to stick to that structure. Consistency, but that's a very broad term, consistency, but I guess being able to stay in that structure and keep people in that structure consistently, being organized, time management, like they're not things that are ever on my top 10 list of qualities or traits. So And I was having a giggle in the car park just before I walked down, because now I've gone from did I deserve it to okay, well then there were some things there I didn't consider, to how crazy from where I started to getting that trophy. But it's absolutely mind blowing. So, you know, it's the first time I can remember not being able to pick something up fairly quickly and naturally in just about anything I've ever done. I am very off the cuff and have been in just about, well, in everything I've ever done in life.
Yeah.
You can't be off the cuff as a manager. Generally speaking, I'm a fast learner. Generally speaking, I'm coachable, and generally speaking, it doesn't take long to pick anything up, and that goes back to sport as a kid or school or anything. But this management stuff, mate, it has been an absolute struggle from day dot. I have not found any of it easy or come to me naturally. I've found the improvement very slow and arduous. It's really been a struggle. So it's a couple of different phases of reflection on it, but that's where I've landed at the moment. I think it's absolutely insane.
Well, some of your remarks is pretty good, and that makes your reflection on the sales manager's trophy even better. Who do you credit more, the Ivan Lendl of the world or the John McEnroe of the world?
Credit more.
Yeah, I mean, who really worked hard to be there? Who, and by the way, let's answer that first question.
Credit more.
Ivan worked harder to get there, Ivan or John?
Ivan.
Absolutely, you got it. So, but who remained on number one ranking for longer?
John.
No, Ivan.
Ivan did.
Yes. So here's the thing that we need to really have a look. Hard work, once it's there, it's consistent. It doesn't go away. Mm. Talent alone doesn't work. You know, that's why they say you can have inspiration. That's 1%, because 99% of success is going to be perspiration. There's a lot of people who go to their deathbed with the gift within because they never had the courage to do it, nor the discipline, nor somebody on their head whacking them to keep on doing it. Mm. You had the privilege of having the last one. But
no, I think it becomes – so that's why I balked at consistency earlier, because one thing that's been consistent throughout everything I've ever done is the hard work side of things. I've never quit at anything, and I work bloody hard. Sometimes I work stupid. Sometimes I work dumb. That hard work goes in the wrong directions. But yeah. I never stop. So – but the fruits of that have always been – you know, winning, like getting to where I was trying to get to by doing that while I was making all the mistakes. And seeing it, the doing this management stuff, mate, it has been a completely different... It's literally felt like I've been running into a brick wall for a couple of years now. And but you don't stop, and that's the difference.
And I think that's the proof that, you know, it doesn't just take geniuses, right? It's not about inspiration. I think that there's a lot of people with natural talent about a lot of things, but it's very difficult to put that into a single position in real estate, such as management of people. And I don't really believe in natural talent when it comes to sales management. You have a little bit of that, but there's a lot of hard work. And the work that you use that probably is quite nice is preparation. There's enormous amount of preparation when people are celebrating, you're preparing the next move. When people are waking up to go to work, you've already prepared. Even when people sit down for a one-on-one discussion, you're fully prepared. You know exactly the angle. You know exactly what the last week was, the previous week. You have already analyzed what they were trying to hide. And the discussion you're about to have with them is going to reveal now the mindset. So, mate, there's a lot of work. I know, as someone who's worked alongside you this year, at how hard it's been for you to go up there, because many times I used to say, no, you're not there yet. Because, yes, the closer you are at the top to me, the harder it gets, because I demand perfection. Mm. In sometimes I say to people, you shouldn't go for perfection, but I like to go for perfection because that's the best way of moving the wall. But you can see, you, a man who had zero organization, to be disorganized is not bad, you know?
Yeah.
And to have won the award, that tells me not only that your leap has been bigger, but where you at, you're higher than the other finalists. Mm. That's all. So don't put yourself down.
No, I'm not putting myself down. It is funny when it's funny. I wish it was something other than laughter. And I think we're just playing at a different level. Like when it became clear that my role was the management side of things, I got the books and first 90 days as a manager and how to be a manager and all this, but I started reading it. We're already so far ahead of that level. We are really playing a different game to a lot of people out there, and it's probably something I underestimated about the word management and what I attached it to. So, it's been great. I still don't feel like we're anywhere near where we need to be. So,
yeah, that's good. That is the game of someone who wants to improve. So, where do you think the next step is in terms of winning next year? Where you're off?
I think if I become more consistent in the things we just rattled off, so I've gotten much, much better at the preparation. I've got much, much better at staying on top of what I need to, but then I'll still have lapses. And unfortunately, you only work out that lapse in hindsight. Hindsight's a word we don't like much at the moment because management's supposed to be about foresight, but I still get to certain situations or the team gets into certain areas and I go, shit, I missed that, and that, and it was only missing parts of the process. It wasn't missing things. So I think once that's completely buttoned down and I've worked out a way in myself of just staying completely consistent with the things I've got to do, I don't think there's anything stopping us. I don't think there's anything stopping the team. So,
all right. Let's talk about your second award, Ambassador of the Year. Why is it easier for you to get it this year? Or does it get easier winning a second time in a row?
I don't know if it was easier. I think we talk about consistency, and what that award is about is being a flag bearer for the network. And everyone's known for a long time that I'd bleed for this joint and that I'd do anything to defend the name, the brand, and the people who run it. So that actually comes easy to me. I think I made a conscious decision a couple of years ago now, but it took a couple of years for it to actually come to fruition to be less of the old Cam and really push hard to be more of the new Cam, which has helped inside the network and the perception. As far as defending the brand, though, that's never changed. I probably just didn't deliver it, execute it, or espouse it in the right way.
Right. So, okay.
Easy is a funny term. I'm not sure easier or you do what you got to do.
There's something that sends a message to me that you feel you misunderstood.
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, but so do you want to say more? Because, I mean, on the night, some of the people were saying, hold on, you know, he used the F word on the night, you know, he likes the microphone on the night, you know, he's all about himself. So what do I answer those people?
It's an interesting thing. You're asked to MC an awards night. You've got to put on a show, so there's elements to what I do on the night or what I did on the night was part of the job.
Yep.
I think if those people sat back and actually looked, there was no I in any of the words. It was all we and it was all team when I was talking about my people. I think the misunderstanding comes through, it's only my own fault. It's 100% my own fault. I'm not, it's funny for the career we're in and the job we're in. Relationships are never my strongest point when it's within my social group. I think I make it, and have done for a long time, very hard for people to get close to me. But once they're close to me, it's a different story. And I think that's where the misunderstanding comes from. And I think the people who know me actually know me. And it's not a huge number of those people, but that room got to see the real me towards the end of the night.
Yeah.
And I think I can feel the misunderstanding starting to change a little bit. I really feel a lot more connection. I really feel like people aren't as
Judgmental, or
Probably not as judgmental, but I'm not as hard to get along with. Someone told me once. One of the leaders in the network said to me once at a conference, "Geez, your hard work. Geez, it's hard to." I was pissed at the time, so all I thought was "F you." But I'm hard work. I know I'm hard work, but deep down, and I think even the judgmental people, I think a lot of that comes from. Can come from jealousy, it can come from a lot of different places. I think if they actually sat down deep down and looked at what I do and what I did and what I mean to the people around me, they also know that I'd have their back just as quickly as anybody else's. So it's very interesting.
Yeah. My answer to some of these people is, you know, there's a reason the guy has won it. He carries the flag, and no, I'm not disappointed to have the guy do these things, and he's not the wrong person to carry the flag. I think that sometimes at an awards night, people need to be free. They've been under stress of performance, and God knows when you work around me, the performance level that's required, it's constant, consistent, it's demanded always. Now, a lot of great people have seen how much you've grown, and to the testament, they said, you know, they have not seen, and they did not, one even said he did not think it was possible for you to have changed to the extent you had. So I think that there's been a lot of hard work, and yes, there's always jealousy out there. Mm. You know, it's difficult to win an award, and it's difficult to win an award and being MC at the same time. And it's very difficult to win two prestigious awards. Now, I just want to talk about something else. That night you had your parents in the room. Now, not many leaders invite their parents. Like, did you invite them for a good pissing competition or a bit of good fun? What happened there?
It's not going to make me cry again. I'm not going to make me cry again. Mum had been before. It was Dad's first time. Dad and I have had a tough relationship for forever, for absolute ever. And... yeah, it's funny you mention people commenting on my swearing on the night. I only swore twice, and it was
three times.
It was all talking about parenting, right, and what we do as parents and how hard we try as parents, but occasionally as parents, or a lot of the time as parents, we F up, and we either F up intentionally, we F up accidentally, but we do, and that's what I was talking about at the time. And Dad and I have had that sort of relationship for a long time. So I was told the story on the night, but... I've had a few issues with one of my sons at school, and because of what the network's been able to do for me, we were able to put him into a position last year where he was in a much better place at school and in a much better environment for him, and it resulted in the end of the year him winning an award. And when he won the award, Crystal and I had to duck out of a seminar to watch it on Zoom, and we came back into the room an absolute mess. But there is, I think... we were probably crying for different reasons. The reason I was crying is because as parents, we do the best we can, but often as parents, we don't feel like we're doing any good, and that was a rare moment for me personally where I thought, no, I've done good. We've done the right thing here. Yeah, something we've done has mattered to the kid.
Yeah.
And that almost instantly I reflected on my dad, and, you know, he's only ever really seen the shit side of stuff. He sees when we're in trouble. He sees when he's done something wrong. He sees when someone's not happy. But on the flip side, he's never been able to really be part of or enjoy any of the good moments. And I didn't know I was going to win any awards. I actually apologised to him beforehand, jokingly saying, "You're going to hear my name a lot, but none of them are going to be for trophies. So sorry, Dad." But it was more about in the early days of the business, before you and I started working together, you know, one thing Dad was always able to do is bail me out of trouble. His way of connecting in life, you seem to be unable to do it in many ways, but if you're ever in trouble, financially or otherwise,
Yes.
He would always bail you out, and he barely raised a thank you for it, you know. And in the early days of my journey with the company and then opening my own office, you know, we were in trouble once or twice, and I had business partners who couldn't stump up their side of the bargain, and my dad would cover it. He paid for some of those people to stay in business with me. He kept the office afloat on more than one occasion when times were tough. And I figure he's never seen what the fruits of that have been, apart from me saying a text saying, oh, thanks, mate. So to have him in the room and see what he's helped build.
Yes.
That was the point of it.
Yes. Because I saw a very proud father in the room.
Yeah, he seemed it. One thing you'll never get out of John is more than two words at a time. Yeah. So he you can tell in his own way. I did get a nice text message the next morning afterwards. The only 80-year-old man I know who uses emojis, lots of emojis, but that's one thing I probably got from him that I used to be super proud of, but worked out maybe it wasn't best for either of us. We're very limited on words, and you'll know when you're doing good or you'll know when you're doing bad, but there's not much in between with him, so... It was, but it was good to see. He had a smile on his face, and it was for him. My wife keeps pushing me to say it was for me. I'd gone pretty deep on it. I needed to give him the moment we had with Isaac, and that was it for him. That's why I did it.
It's a nice moment, man. All right, so let's go away from the family situation and let's go back to the two awards. Which one means more to you and why?
Oh, very easy to say ambassador on face value, but as I said, now that I'm more and more thinking of what I've gone through in the management side of things, it almost ambassador means more because ambassador is about who I really am as a person. I'm fiercely loyal. I will defend anyone who's wearing the same jersey as me. I don't intentionally go out to do wrong by anybody. I understand that my execution is sometimes, and delivery is a long way off. And the amount, no one will ever understand how much value I place on where I've come and my family's been able to come from to where we are now, how much I attribute that to the Wisebury Network and the Wisebury brand, and that might sound wanky or whatever. I don't really care, but it's people not understanding the story. I said on the night, but I probably didn't emphasise it enough, it would not be possible for that to happen. It would not have been possible anywhere else. The way the cards have fallen and the things that have happened for us to end up where we are now, that doesn't happen anywhere else. I've never seen it, never heard of it happening. I look back and go, what are the chances of that being able to happen? Probably none. So to not win that award, I'd have to question myself and go, where have I fallen down in defending this place and these people who I hold so dear to my heart. The management side of things, I'm finally allowing myself to give myself a bit of pat on the back. I do, as I said, it has been something completely unnatural to me, so I've probably overcome more hurdles to become sales manager than I have the ambassador. Some of the things, I think it's been much harder. So in that essence, which one do you hold more dear? But I think it's always going to be the ambassador.
It's not a simple question because one was a natural talent and the other one was a lot of hard work. Yeah. And then you seem to go for the natural talent and not recognizing the hard work, the sweat, the number of hours when you scratch your head and going, hold on. Isn't doing my best not enough? I mean, all that stuff and the pain. And
I think maybe because I still don't feel like I'm anywhere close to grasping it. Like
No. I believe you're still very far from it.
Yeah, but I think that's...
I'm only one vote.
No, I know, but as I said...
I'm just joking.
No,
man.
But that's all right. No, you're not joking, brother. I know you're not joking, and that's fine because I still feel... a lot of the time, like I'm bashing my head against a wall. So, but then maybe that laughter was just before I got here was finally the recognition that shit, mate, you've had to jump through some, You.
It's hard to organize. People look at Formula One and they see Max Verstappen, they see Hamilton, they see Leclerc. They're not really paying attention to how hard it has to be for a Christian Horner.
Mm.
Right? Yeah. He's sitting there, he's not driving.
Yeah.
He's getting information from 550 sources, right? And he has to make a calculation.
Yeah.
And sometimes afterwards, the only thing that people do is they sit down and they go, oh, do you think that you should have called in Max one lap earlier? I mean, are you dumb? The guy's got so much information coming in. And mate, you're not realizing how heavy it is on a sales manager to have all these salespeople, the marketing people, then the support people, and all of that. On top of that, you have to respond to leadership, and you have to make all of these things dance at the same time, because marketing does one wrong thing, it does impact. A salesperson does something wrong, and then whatever you've done in your marketing goes to the bin. The support team member gives the 150 folders to an office, right? That needs maybe only about 3 or 4 a week.
Yeah.
Well, it's stuff up the other office, and they all okay to let's print some more, let's spend some more money, but they're not getting it that someone has to oversee all of these things. So I think that you're not giving yourself enough the credit.
Okay, well, it's not underestimating how hard management is, and I think it's been good, especially for our team. They have probably got better access to what goes on behind the scenes and a lot of staff in a lot of offices, I believe, to some extent, not all of it. But I think for a few of them especially, they've started to click to how much work goes in behind the scenes. And it's bloody hard, and there's a lot in it. And listen, man, I'm a guy who grew up loving a pat on the back and wanted to win trophies. And this job, that management side of things, is not that at all. You cop it when things are going wrong, and you cop it when things are going right. So there's and the work that goes into it, I don't think anyone understands.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone will understand. And that, I know, that's what I said before, we're playing at a different level. I believe, and I don't mean this, I'm going to get misunderstood again, but I believe the level we're going to and the standards we're setting inside our business, which haven't paid off completely yet, but the sprouts are there. We're not far off from greatness, and I believe that is probably far above what most others are doing, and the preparation, the work that goes involved. Like, I know I'm sitting there on a Sunday going through every bit of information to put together what the next week looks like. I know I'm sitting there at 9 or 10 o'clock at night after having to come home, do my own, after my listing appointments, and doing, being a performer as a salesperson at the same time, and analysing what the team have done for the day and working out. I know all that stuff's going on, and so I don't underestimate it. I don't feel like I'm putting myself down. And as I've said a couple of times now, I've probably only in the last day or so come to appreciate that what I'm actually being able to do.
You've been able to just go to Tasmania for a wedding of one of your sales team member, like for Stephen and Lisa.
Yes.
Yeah. So and
part of management's remembering people's names.
Since when did you go to? Have you been able to place and spend the equivalent of your salary in taboos and whiskey? I mean these are things that we do forget.
But that's the stuff that I attribute to, that sort of goes to the other side. I mean, it's great to, the biggest validation I think you can have as a manager is, well, not validation, that's the wrong word, but one of our biggest goals has been trying to build an independent team. And for a long time I couldn't go away, or I couldn't do anything because of the way I used to lead and manage. It was too self-reliant, so things would fall apart. But for us to be able to go away, the team's still getting results, and that's a little checkbox where I go, okay, we're heading in the right direction. The actual ability to go and do these things, I attribute that to, that's why Wiser Ambassador is so important to me. Like, what we're actually able to do now on a semi-regular basis, and the position we're in, coming from, like, flat broke, absolute flat broke, to where we are now. That I don't put that in the management category. Maybe I'm wrong there, but that just goes down to hard work and what we've all been able to build together, which no one will ever be able to question that in front of me and not cop the beans. So if that's being abrasive, if that's being too hard to get along with, then that's just not having an understanding of what...
No, you're simply very, very good at pissing people off and it leaves a mark and triggers that doesn't go away that easy. That's all.
Doesn't go away.
You're that linen shirt with a crease that will never just go away because you iron it. You know, it doesn't iron off. People need to understand that. No one comes in a perfect shape. There's no such thing as perfection as people, right? But I have to say that when you have fun or you take the piss out of someone, I think you do it so well that you leave them with some kind of trauma.
Natural ability. I don't manage it too well. Oh, I think it's just crazy, and I've always thought this, because a lot of people, again, you point the finger at yourself, but to see all the good and, some of those people that I know have complained have also been on the end of phone calls from me where I've said, yeah, okay, how's everything going? Is your kid all right? Your mum okay? Is there anything we can do to help? So very convenient to then go, he said, therefore he made a joke. You know, it's and that I can't get around. I'll never be able to get around it. Like, and I know you've struggled with this, people's similar perception. A good time. I think life's too serious. I think life's too hard as it is. So when we're on a dance floor or when we're out and about, and if ever you're going to get dance and have a good time, it's on a dance floor.
I hear. But as a sales manager now, what if you naturally use those talents of yours? Is it possible to, destroy salespeople or piss them off?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, so how do you avoid that? Not having piss party, or what, I mean,
well, yeah, there is an element where, especially when before we went into business together, I was much more social around the team. There was a lot of that. Friday afternoon drinks at my house were a regular occurrence, and I've had to pretty much knock that on the head altogether because the balance between work life and social life, I don't think it can ever fully exist, especially when you're a leader or manager role. I don't think it can happen because you go back to work on Monday and you want to say, righto, we're at work now, but that's how can we go from being great friends on Saturday and having drinks together to now I've got to do my job. It just doesn't work.
Right.
So, and yes, there's an element of you can't have the dance floor banter and the microphone banter when you're trying to help people achieve their goals. It doesn't work both ways. And I'm still probably a long way off in that regard. Much, much better, but a long way off. But it has changed. There's only a couple of people left from the old carry-on days, but the chalk and cheese, the overall environment and the mixture of social stuff off the...
Right. I mean, they say that, a behavior change is all right, but what you've gone through this year, or maybe it's been in the works in the last 2.5 years, is personality change and identity almost. So what would be a piece of advice you could give someone who really want to change? Because seriously, man, what you've done, people will not realize how hard it was. And we having a bit of a laugh here in this podcast, but we're not telling them the number of time when you copped it from me, right? And I'm sure that after I finished the phone call and had access to my pressure machine, that you probably did too.
It's easy, mate. What's the longest I've gone without talking to you? Yeah, no one will ever understand that, and I don't think anyone. I playing at a different level, I don't think a lot of people could stand it. To be honest, like withstand what we do to each other. To be honest, like this, mate, you put the acid on me, but I have caused your. I'm responsible for a few of those numbers on your blood pressure monitor. So.
No, but still,
yeah. No, like, but
if someone wants to learn and try and change identity, almost. I mean, something's happened. I mean, I know you're an avid reader. You're like reading a lot of the books, and but the changes that I have seen personally in this last year, especially. It's almost that exponential line curve that is now curving uphill. You know, that for many years the work's been there, but you hardly saw change, and then it's very easy to see you going back there, and people would go, "See, I told you, he hasn't changed. There's no way." But because you kept on going, that curve just turned and takes off. You know, how can someone who wants to emulate what you do accomplish that?
You have to decide, but really decide whether you're happy with where you're at, and you have to decide, really decide whether you want to change it or not. Because the pain to change, like I talk about management, and I'll include that in there, the pain to try and get this thing right or learn it is... it's been excruciating at times. So why would you put yourself through it if you didn't want to, yeah? And it's not about reading lots of books. It's not about doing all that, because you won't do it unless you actually want to change or you're actually not happy with where you're at. And the biggest thing that's held me back is it hasn't been from wanting to change or needing to change. The exponential part has now come because all the effort I've gone to over the last 10 years is finally starting to become a little bit clearer in my head and starting to fall into place, which is why that's happened. But it all started with not happy with where I'm at. I'm not happy with who I am, essentially. I'm not happy with the effect I have on people, all those things. And I've wanted to do something about it.
But no one is going to be applying that technique. What, you have to become unhappy with yourself before you really make the changes?
Well, you have to work out whether you're really happy or you want any more. If you're happy 100% where you are, then stay 100% where you are. But then you can't complain. You can't blame anybody. You can't have it both ways. And that's, I used to blame everyone else for not having any friends. That guy's a dickhead, and that guy's a dickhead. And the list of the list of people who had something wrong with them in my eyes was very, 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 very long. And then, started to understand people. Everyone is who they are, and everyone's doing their best. So I became a little bit easier. But then it was, well, if you get to be who you are, I get to be who I am, and never should anyone be able to tell me any different. So then I went through my phase where no one could tell me anything to do, and the problems weren't getting solved. But it's age, maturity. I've probably matured a little bit later in life, but I've never wanted to. I've always been one, if I'm not happy with 100% where I'm at, I'll do something about it. There is no step-by-step for that. Tell vendors about the first step. Step one of the four-step process is to decide that you actually want to do something about it and not, can I say bullshit? But not the bullshit decide that I want to do something about it, not the words I want to do something about it. Just
empty intention.
Not the empty intention, because we see that a couple of times a year in the room with people going, yep, that's it. Like this I have wanted to be a better version of myself for a long, long, long time.
But making the decision, there's still something else, because you can make the decision.
Well, then you have to act on it.
Okay, so you act on that, but that's sometimes not enough, because sometimes you think you're doing it right.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes you read the books and go, that says do this, so that's what I'm doing. Whack! It's not. What do you mean it's not, you know? So definitely there has to be another ingredient that is involved in your change.
I don't know, I'd love to give someone a golden nugget, but there's wanting to do it. And
you can only give yourself, man, but there is that formula that is in there.
There's wanting
that will
to do
allow.
It, really wanting to do it.
Yep.
There's then deciding to act on it, and then you can't stop. Like, the action can't stop. like the progress might, like I've talked about with the management, where for a long time I felt like I'm getting nowhere, but there will come a moment where you go, oh, shit, I'm a different person. Yeah, I used to think, we've never had this discussion. So when, like there's markers, there's things that have happened where I've gone, shit, I've gone, because you don't feel it.
Yeah.
But eventually, one day something will happen and you go, ah, the old me would have been a problem. Old me would have had a problem with getting nominated for Sales Manager of the Year, because old me, I was a business owner. I was a leader. I owned Carry On, and I'm not a manager. I'm the boss. I'm the whatever. And that's just been completely authentic and honest with you.
Yeah.
And it was a marker for me when the nominations were read out. I was actually happy and not ego bruised, and like I used to sit in seminars, and when it came time to, now I'm going to talk to the sales manager, I'd tune out. I'm not a sales manager. I'm the leader, which might explain why I'm so bad at management now, because I didn't listen to any of it. But there's markers to the growth that you don't see until it's something happens to prove your point. So in that was a marker for me of growth. And sometimes, because we are so full on inside our business, it's not until I walk into another business or someone else asks me questions, I go, ah, we're probably playing at a different level because they're not there yet. So the thing for me is never stop. Yeah, decide it, never quit, because you don't get anything out of quitting.
But I'm hearing another thing. I'm hearing the fact you're talking about the word ego here.
Yeah. It seems to have left the building. I can't put a finger on it when.
Right.
I no longer, that's why I probably didn't give the answers that would excite people too much about winning the awards. I used to be, when I started real estate, my way of getting myself going and my way of becoming successful was convincing myself that I had to win.
Right.
So win the leaderboard, win the listing, win the trophies and all that stuff. And that was what drove me. Some people work off hate or whatever. I'm like, nah, as long as I have to win, everyone's going to win. That's been gone for quite a while now. I think I've actually probably lost a little bit too much of that sometimes. I think, I need to get that little bit of that killer back. But
you can switch it on. At will. That's the thing.
First,
it never dies, really.
No.
You can tame it because it's not necessary at this level, and then it would be necessary at different level.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And so, it's being able to call on it when it's required, which I'm now mastering much, much better.
Yes.
But it is, ego stopped a lot. Ego gave me a lot of what I got, because without that ego, I'm not chasing the wins, and it probably carried me for a little while. Then became very apparent that it was a huge problem anywhere other than sales. It was a huge problem. So I worked very, very hard to eliminate it altogether. And now it's playing the game between good ego, bad ego, and everything in between.
Yeah.
But you just, I think the problem for growth for people or people looking to do what I did, like if I sat here and actually wrote down what we've done day by day, week by week, year by year, people wouldn't sign up for it. Who's going to sign up for the amount of hard work that goes into all aspects, being a better parent, being a better friend, being a better everything? And I think that's what stops people. They don't understand, one, they don't understand what hard work is, or two, when they really see it, scares the shit out of them. And I think anyone wanting to start that journey or is in that journey and thinks they're doing it hard, got to really have a gut check moment with yourself and a real honest conversation and go, am I really? Because I stuff it up all the time. I go from periods where I'm reading lots of books to periods where I'm reading none. I go from periods where everything's falling into place, where then I feel like I've regressed 10 years, but it always helps when you got someone telling you that's what's happened.
Well, I wonder who. The thing that I want to ask and tell you, though, is what you're talking about is the difference between changing a behavior or two, and lasting change does not rely on the change of one behavior or two. Lasting change relies on the permanent change of identity. And I think that your identity have gone to the next level. I think to come back to the beginning of your story, something clicked in you last year when you heard the news about your son.
Mm.
That maybe he had something that really is going to challenge him in life. Mm. And I saw that beginning of a click, you know. But a click doesn't mean you know how to do it. I mean, it's like, right, a click means, yeah, that's it. I have to change. Yeah. I have to change not some behavior. It's going to have to be real identity stuff. Yeah. And then there's been a lot of hard work to, if you will, support that desire to change the entire identity.
Maybe then it's a higher purpose that people need, or there's nothing, as a parent, there's nothing more of a higher purpose in life than your kids. Nothing. And, yeah, again, I was a young parent. I was 25. If people who think I'm loose now should have known me when I was 25 years old. Like my wife will tell you when she first met me how loose I was. And having a kid at 25 didn't really change much. But then you mature and you see shit. This is pretty bloody important. And when we worked out what was going on with Isaac, and when we went through some of the things that, when he went through some of the things that he had to go through. If I thought I'd been anteing up as a dad at that point, I realised pretty quick I wasn't even close.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously the skills are transferable, hopefully, and the mindset is transferable. So,
all right, mate. Listen, just to end this podcast, and I gave you a bit more time, mainly because you won two awards. I just want to say this.
Shut up. They're all sick of me on the microphone. just shut him up.
Listen, I know how much you've changed, and I know how deep down you're a very different person to the person that you're fighting all your life to try and portray. And I think that portrayal is nothing else but a self-defense mechanism that no longer needs to be defended. So I want to ask you one question before we leave. How do you know that you're leading an inspired life?
Question.
Mate, if you've been listening to my podcast, you would have known that
ask that at the end of the year. I listen to every episode in between all the management. And how do you know you're leading an inspired life? I think because I've got a bunch of words rattling around in my head that I don't think suit, but I think you know you're leading an inspired life when you are working towards something that isn't superficial, that isn't tangible. Like, leading an inspired life is not trying to make a lot of money, trying to make a lot of money to give your kids the best future they've got and to go on trips and do all those things and create memories. That's very different to just doing it to make money. If people around you are changing and if people around you are going up levels, then you are the sum of your environment. So if they're inspired, you're probably leading an inspired life. I'm normally pretty good with words, but trying to quantify that question is a hard
maybe
one.
Maybe you'll come back some other time and tell me. But I think that thanks to your inspiration, your father has experienced something different on the night. Mm. And that is already part of leading an inspired life. Mm. I could see it. That thanks to you on that night, even though he's 80, probably in the fall of his life, that is giving him some inspiration. You know, that maybe I've done okay of a job. Yeah. And that's inspiring.
If that's how he's felt about it, then that's goal achieved, because that's what I needed him to know. Like, we all, it's all very easy to sit back, especially when you're a kid. And, you know, I was a bit different. I moved out of home when I was 17, but the kids still living at home when they're 30, 35 years of age. Now I'm blaming their parents for everything that they've ever done to them. And then just be careful, because with the passing of time, you soon realise that everyone does the best they can and they should be acknowledged as such. So
thanks, Cam.
No worries, mate.
Thanks for this,
man.
Thank you. Well done.
Talk soon. Bye.